I glanced around the car at my companions. Our group consisted of some 26 doctors, 6 pharmacists, 6 women, our children, and some elderly people, both men and women, our parents and relatives. Seated on their baggage or on the floor of the car, they looked both tired and apathetic, their faces betraying a sort of foreboding that even the excitement of our arrival was unable to dispel. Several of the children were asleep. Others sat munching the few scraps of food we had left. And the rest, finding nothing to eat, were vainly trying to wet their desiccated lips with dry tongues. Heavy footsteps crunched on the sand. The shout of orders broke the monotony of the wait. The seals on the cars were broken. The door slipped slowly open, and we could already hear them giving us orders. And as an interjection, this tactic of barking orders at us when we're tired and disoriented is very effective if we haven't prepared ourselves for it. Just today, and this was October 22nd, I heard a mother describe how, when ordered to stay behind by police who had arrived in response to her 911 call with a medical concern about her son, because they wanted no witnesses when they confronted her son, she obeyed because they were both authoritative and reassuring. When they said, "Don't worry, ma'am, everything will be all right," they were pulling a well-worn leaf from the book of totalitarian tactics. And while I'm on this subject, I have to say that I would have appreciated some numbers on this issue of police killing and injuring of low income, generally brown and black of skin, because it seems to me what we're seeing is a global acceleration, i.e. part of a plan, i.e. calculated, and that bringing on that particular expert suggested that these incidents were part of some class-old problem of bad judgment in fear-laden situations, as opposed to a new development, an acceleration of a conscious plan. Continuing with Miklos Nisley. Already they were barking orders at us. "Everyone get out and bring his hand baggage with him. Leave all heavy baggage in the cars." We jumped to the ground, then turned to take our wives and children in our arms and help them down, for the level of the cars was over 4.5 feet from the ground. The guards had us line up along the tracks. Before us stood a young SS officer, impeccable in his uniform, a gold rosette gracing his lapel, his boots smartly polished. Though unfamiliar with the various SS ranks, I surmised from his armband that he was a doctor. Later I learned that he was the head of the SS group, that his name was Dr. Mengele, and that he was chief physician of the Auschwitz concentration camp. As the medical selector for the camp, he was present at the arrival of every train. In the moments that followed, we experienced certain phases of what at Auschwitz was called selection. As for the subsequent phases, everyone lived through them according to his particular fate.